The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov, nice to have you back, Howard. I send my condolences to you and your family on your recent loss. Shenishma b'sora tovot.
Thanks, Anthony. Thank you so much. Let's get straight into the stories. It's reported that an Israeli team was in Khartoum yesterday to finalize a normalization agreement with Sudan.
So we have been discussing this in your absence earlier in the week about Sudan and whether Sudan could possibly be the next country on the list of those reaching normalization agreements with Israel, peace agreements. I don't know what we should call them these days. We've never really been at war with Sudan, or for that matter with the United Arab Emirates or with Bahrain. So it's difficult to call it a peace agreement, but I think a normalization agreement is a nice term which kind of reflects the situation. I think that for some people, Sudan comes as a little bit of a surprise because there isn't an obvious connection between Israel and Sudan, which would then make this an imperative either for Sudan or for Israel. But I think what's been happening is that with the U.S. involvement, the Trump administration has been taking the opportunity to kind of build in normalization with Israel almost as part of any conversation that it's having with any country around the world. And I think really that this is where this comes from, because we heard earlier in the week that the U.S. administration had agreed to remove Sudan from the list of state sponsors of terror. And that comes against the background of this agreement that was reached with Sudan, where Sudan would acknowledge its role that was played by the previous Sudanese regime in carrying out certain terror attacks against U.S. citizens. And they even agreed to pay up certain compensation. And so while we're already on the subject of reaching agreements with countries, why not let's throw in and you will normalize your ties with Israel? That's kind of what it feels like to me. And we saw it certainly in the Balkans as well with that recent agreement where it wasn't quite sure whether the embassy would be in Jerusalem afterwards. There was a little bit of confusion. And all of this really arose out of state U.S.-sponsored talks between different countries, and they seem to kind of want to throw in this kind of clause which says, and you will normalize your arrangements and your relationships with Israel. As far as Sudan is concerned, it's welcome. I mean, I don't think that we should be cynical about the importance of normalizing relations with countries with whom we previously didn't have diplomatic relations. I think that's always welcome. And I think the time is certainly a good time. I think that there is certainly an opportunity now. And countries like Sudan will look at the UAE and Bahrain and potentially Saudi Arabia, and they will say, if those countries can move towards normalization with Israel, why shouldn't I? So I think that there is a good imperative. There's a good basis atmosphere for countries to agree to wish to normalize ties with Israel. And in turn, this allows Israel to have kind of better standing in the international community and to potentially navigate those very, very difficult votes, particularly at organizations like the United Nations and other international bodies where countries like Sudan previously might have said, it's a no-brainer. We're going to vote against anything that has to do with Israel. Now, they might have a slightly different consideration when simply casting their vote again. Mm. So overall, I think that this is good news. I'm not sure that this is going to be quite as warm and as immediate as we've seen the agreements with the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain, where things have really gone crazy in terms of business relationships and in terms of trading and in terms of tourists running backwards and forwards. The whole thing has been so quick to move. I don't think with Sudan it's going to quite be like that, but it's certainly a very welcome development nonetheless.
Absolutely, and I think no matter what, it just starts this tide of positivity and peace and relationships that is very, very hard to stem. So when you've got countries, and we're going to talk about it as our next story, like South Africa, who will condemn Israel at any opportunity, they start to look a little maybe isolated, unfair, whereas in the past there hasn't really been this group of countries that would be supportive of Israel.
Yeah, I think there's certainly a wave. There's certainly a tide that's flowing in a positive way. And I think we can thank the U.S. administration, particularly President Donald Trump, who seems to have worked very hard with some members of his team to create this environment, to create this atmosphere. And you're right. I mean, once the flow is there, we should definitely try to push as many other countries onto the bandwagon as possible. It is something which is kind of politically acceptable, can we call it that now? It's a kind of a dumb thing right now. We see certain countries doing it, and other countries who otherwise might not have considered it would say, why not? You know, there's nothing stopping me from doing it. It would give me potential goodwill as far as the United States is concerned. Sudan will certainly be earning a lot of dollar income from its agreement with the United States. And I'm not quite sure whether President Trump said, we're going to predicate whatever money we're going to give you guys on reaching agreement with Israel. Probably not. But nonetheless, Sudan stand to gain a lot from this, and potentially the relationship with Israel will bring them even more. So why not?
Absolutely. So let's just talk about the ANC for a moment, wasting no opportunity to condemn Israel. What have they, said now?
Well, they put out the statement regarding the detention of Palestinian Mr. Maher al-Akhtar, African National Congress Eastern Cape official statement that came out the day before yesterday, which is filled with spelling inconsistencies and also even the name of the individual, Maher al-Akras actually is his name, was incorrectly spelt in the title of this particular communique. But it refers to this whole issue of detention, administrative detention that Israel has used over the years in order to try to keep the security situation under some element of control. And of course, the ANC has compared this administrative detention that Israel uses to the administrative detention that was used during the apartheid regime. People were detained without trial. And of course, the ANC is saying, well, this is effectively an apartheid government, because this is what the South African apartheid government used in its attempt to try and keep things under control. And, you know, obviously, I would like to point out that there are some significant differences between what South Africa was going through back in those days and what Israel is going through, has been through and continues to go through in terms of security threats specifically. I'm not talking about the overall political environment, but in terms of security threats, I mean, it is clear that Israel is under constant threat of attack from outside of its borders and even from within. And only yesterday we spoke about the fact that there was this rocket that had been fired from Gaza that hardly even made the news anyway, not even in Israel for that matter. It's become so accepted as part of the situation here, as part of the lie of the land, that Israel will simply suffer attacks, terror attacks, attempts to dig tunnels under the border in order to gain access any possible which way. And so obviously from a security point of view, the Israeli government needs to respond accordingly and needs to use certain powers that might be required in order to maintain security control. And the case of Maher al-Akhras is one that has certainly reached the news. He's been on a hunger strike for the past almost 90 days, protesting against his.
And that's not just intermittent fasting, hey? I mean, that's a proper hunger strike.
That's
because I've been doing intermittent fasting.
Water only.
Oh, I see. Okay, fine.
Drinking water only. That's what he's been doing. He's been drinking water only, refusing to take any food for the past 80 days. Now, obviously, his medical situation is dire. He's been admitted to the Kaplan Medical Center in Rehovot, still under detention. I would like to emphasize that his particular case has been brought before the court system in Israel. And even though organizations like B'Tselem, which are very vocal about these matters, have said, well, when cases like this get brought before the court, they're very, very seldom situations where the court would rule in favor of the person who's being detained and would demand that the Israeli government release them from detention. There have been cases. There certainly have been cases, even though B'Tselem chooses to somehow downplay the cases where the courts have intervened. On this particular situation, the court has decided not to order his release. There are conflicting views as to whether he, in fact, has been part of Islamic Jihad, Quds Brigade or not, whether he has carried out terror attacks against Israel or not. Of course, he's denying it. The Israeli government have claimed that he has been involved. So it's a typical he said, she said situation. And he has been detained previously. It's not the first time that he's been detained. So this is clearly an individual who's on the radar, who's been involved in activities before. He is in administrative detention, which means that he's been detained without trial. Mm. The Israeli government has said that he will be released in the near future, but they have refused to release him now for reasons which are unclear to me and weren't disclosed in the court. But the court seemed to accept that particular position and said to him, you know, that he will be released and he should know that. And his response was, well, I'm going to continue to hunger strike unless I get released today.
You know what's so fascinating, Anthony, is, of course, the ANC was made the statement, but there's a peace activist in Gaza who has been detained for many, many months because he had the audacity to have a Zoom call with other activists, some of them being in Israel, to try and bring peace to the area, and Hamas have locked him away. I know that that UN there's been a lot of talk around it, but you don't hear a single word coming out of the South African government around things like that.
I agree with you. I mean, I think there are two things that I can say about the statement. The first of which is that it really doesn't present the overall situation regarding this particular matter. Mm. It picks and chooses certain facts and figures in order to enhance the strength of the announcement and the strength of their case. And of course, the point that you make, which is the lack of consistency between the way that Israel treats people who present a potential security threat to the Israeli state, as assessed by the Israeli security situation, and people who are treated in even more extreme ways by other regimes, be they Iran, or be they the Palestinian Authority, or be they Hamas in Gaza, or be they any other regime, the Chinese government. I mean, we could go through a whole list of countries that have, issues with regard to the way that they detain people without trial. And you're right. I mean, the ANC is very silent on those points. So consistency would be welcome. And I think we need to put all of this into some context.
Absolutely. We don't have a lot of time, but I do want to hear about what went on in Knesset yesterday in the Israeli parliament. I heard it was a bit of a circus.
There was a bit of a circus yesterday, and this was because, unexpectedly, the leader of the Meretz faction, Tamar Zandberg, decided to raise a matter that was not expected in the Knesset for a vote. And that matter relates to Prime Minister Netanyahu's involvement with the acquisition of submarines for the Israeli Navy from Germany, something that's been the subject of debate and a lot of controversy over the past few years. And she decided that she would like to propose to the Knesset plenum that a legal parliamentary probe be conducted into Netanyahu's involvement in this particular case. It went to the vote, and lo and behold, because things were not well coordinated beforehand with the various whips, the vote was passed by 25 to 23, 48 people in the Knesset at the time, who allowed this particular vote to pass. And of course, then a whole a flurry of activity took place, trying to cancel the vote, trying to annul the vote, trying to maintain that it was done illegally. All of this made the whole thing look really, really stupid, because ultimately, if a parliamentary probe is to be raised, in any event, it needs the vote of at least 51 people in the Knesset, and clearly that wasn't the case. So from the outset, nothing was going to happen, but the Likud party did really try and do a lot of running around yesterday to get this particular vote cancelled or scrapped off the books completely in order to avoid embarrassment. I think the embarrassment has been caused. I don't think anything's going to come out of it, but certainly an embarrassing moment for the Likud, who were clearly unprepared yesterday.
Absolutely. Time is 8:01.
Just before we run away, yes. Just a reminder to everybody that Israel changes its clocks back to winter time over this coming weekend. So whereas until now we've been 1 hour ahead of you guys, as of Sunday morning, we will be back onto equal time with you for those who have friends, business relations, relatives in Israel. Just a reminder. I wish you guys a good weekend and a Shabbat Shalom.
Thanks, Anthony. Lovely to chat to you again.